Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
It is tough when you're on a welfare benefit. There are daily struggles to stretch the few dollars that you have to cover the basic necessities of life. But life on the margins in an affluent society can also bring another type of poverty, the poverty that comes from loneliness and social isolation. And very often the isolated are overlooked and neglected. They don't necessarily appear in government-funded programs as such because there hasn't been a lot of research on what isolation actually means in a country like Australia. Well, that is until now. Anglicare has recently released its very important research subject on this topic, investigating issues of isolation. Sue King is Anglicare's Director of Research and Policy. Welcome back to Open House, Sue.
Loneliness is actually a subjective feeling that people can have at any time in their life. It's just something that just can happen depending on personal circumstances. Mm. Social isolation is an objective term which actually looks at the number of networks that somebody has, the diversity of those networks, and the depth of those networks. So somebody who is socially isolated, it actually is a measurable thing. You can actually look at the number of contacts or networks that people have. And we note that as people get deeper and deeper into financial hardship and poverty, their networks get narrower and less diverse. People don't have the financial capital to go out and do stuff. They don't have the financial capital to get on a bus or a train to go and, you know, join the community stuff. They don't want to invite people around to their house because they can't afford to give them a cup of tea or a cup of coffee or whatever. And they become increasingly isolated. And that then seems to generate all sorts of, like, mental health issues, which can then exacerbate it even further. So there seems to be a very strong correlation between people who are socially isolated and people who are experiencing financial hardship.
And well, now this is interesting. You know, statisticians talk about causality and correlation. So if two things correlate, that doesn't necessarily mean that one causes the other. So my question to you after looking at all of this research is, does poverty cause social isolation, or does social isolation cause poverty, or do they just correlate?
Look, there's a massive amount of literature that I've explored on that issue.
And yeah, well, I don't have time to read the literature.
So the answer. No, the answer is actually, I think, when I've actually read through all the literature, it's one of those things that's a self-generating cycle.
Yes.
So people who find themselves in financial hardship, increasingly their social networks start to die, and they have fewer and fewer networks. And then that, in fact, reduces the opportunity for them to actually get out of their poverty because they can't rely on their networks to help them find the opportunities to get out.
Yeah, and you add into the mix mental health, as you did, and you've got a three-legged cord that can't be broken, seems to me.
Yeah, it is a cycle, and it is a concerning cycle. There are ways of breaking it. I mean, there are, in the report we look at all the different, you know, there's some government priorities and government policies that could be put in place with a focus on the building of communities.
Yeah.
But there's also what can happen in the individual community. So, for example, I think this is where churches play a really significant role, because churches can have a magnificent impact in terms of breaking the social isolation. We have a thing called a mobile community pantry, which is which we operate out of our local churches on a cycle basis. And people come in from the community; they get a chance to meet with the church people, you know, with the parishioners, the volunteers. They get a chance to connect, and they do it on a regular basis. And we know that some of those people end up coming to church and being a part of the church community. So we know that their churches can be a very important catalyst in breaking that pattern of social isolation for people. And people can, and it's not costing those people anything. So it's actually a very positive interaction.
It's important that you've done the work because, of course, these days government policy runs on an evidentiary base, and that's perfectly understandable. But there's an argument in education circles along these lines, and it becomes ideological and political. Do people who live in impoverished suburbs have lower educational outcomes because we're not remediating them well, and if we just remediate the child or add a reading program in the school, will that help? Or do we have to do a lot more, recognising that there's an entire community effect about that poverty and, in this case, isolation brings? you know, many of us sit in that second camp. You say, no, what you've actually got to do is run school breakfast programs, for instance. You've got to get parents every now and then to come into the school. And it sounds to me like you're saying the same thing in terms of social isolation. A government's first priority, first instinct might not be to provide some assistance to run a community program. I might say, well, we've already given people social security payments. Why can't they just go out and, you know, go to the pictures or whatever it might be? But no, the men's shed or the support for Anglicare to run another food van out at church, that's the thing that might make the difference.
Yeah, I think that's where it's actually about community. And it is, as you said, when you're talking about education, it is about community, and it's about building a thriving community, you know, one where people are involved. We've had a particularly interesting program out at some of the schools in Western Sydney, which is working with Aboriginal children in terms of culture and dance, but it brings the parents into the school, and then they do fashion parades, and they generate a whole lot of amazing things that go on in the school community, and the other children get really involved in it because they think it's really interesting, and so you actually get a really big engagement of the school community, and that's where you start to see change, and that's where that community building is going on is where you actually see change.
Yes,
and you're building on the strengths in the community. You find what those strengths are, and then you work with those strengths, and that's what makes a difference.
Yes, well, your study is available for people to view online, but what will you now do with the findings of the study? Obviously, you're talking to government. It'll inform your advocacy with them, but what else will Anglicare do as a result of this?
Look, we're actually... When I started this, I actually thought it would be a one-off study, but I actually think it's the beginning of a journey for us, because I really want to now start having a look. We looked at this in relationship to poverty, social isolation and poverty, and for us, it's going to inform our programs, to ensure that our programs that are working in the area of financial hardship are actually really focusing on building community, and is actually now part of our new strategic plan, which we're launching. And that's one of the three pillars, is community and building community. So it's really going to inform how we do our work. So I think that's really, really important. So it will make a difference to us. But I also think there's a lot more to it than just about poverty. I think there's a whole issue around social isolation and ageing. And I've become very concerned about, we have a lot of programs that help people stay in their home as they become more frail and get older. And that's fine, because it's leaving them to be independent. But we do know that as they get frailer, it's more and more difficult for them to get out.
Yes.
And we know that social isolation factor is actually starting to become a big issue for these people.
Yes.
So what can we do then? So we're looking at, you know, working on community visitor schemes and a whole range of things to help those particular people as well. So we're quite focused now on looking at how we do community better and how we build community, and extending this study into other particular groups of people, not just people who are financially struggling.
Yes, you wonder how we ever lost the knowledge of that. had it up to two generations ago, maybe. We knew all this stuff. They knew it in the Old Testament. It was the case in the New Testament. when did we lose our knowledge that community was where it was at?
Yeah, I think a lot of people have always held on to this view, but I think, just as we've got on, I think technology also tends to, I mean, it says it builds community through the cyber communities and stuff, but I'm not sure that technology doesn't also break community down. I think as churches, and I think as individuals, and I think as agencies such as Anglicare, we need to be really focused on restoring community and building community. I actually think that's where the future lies, in terms of creating communities that are healthy and hopeful and optimistic and thriving. I think that's the way to go.
Isn't it ever? That's Sue King, Research Director of Anglicare.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.